Are you rushing, huh?
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your pusher.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the hot block commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show and keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Roll with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. The sports medicine, the sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26 tour, the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Greetings, War Room Nation. Welcome back to the Roundtable. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports, revolutionizing the revolution in sports media. I'm Devin McMillan. Akil and I are back from the West Coast, and we're joined by our co-hosts, Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, and Paul Johnson. We got a great show for you today, as usual. So sit back and listen up. As we bring Black History Month to an end, we'll discuss the NFL Combine, great mugshots, NFL deals, NBA news, and much more. Go ahead and join us in that JW Philly Realty chat room right now at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to join in the conversation. Call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. Before we jump into today's rundown, we'd like to shout out the team. The future of sports talk radio has arrived, so be sure to listen to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. This week they had Ron Jaworski on to talk about the state of the Philadelphia Eagles. And shout out to Eagles writer Brandon Campbell, also a War Room Sports contributor. Shout out to Brandon for giving us that exclusive article before the interview aired on Tuesday. Also, catch Mojo and the crew of the season ticket on Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio as well. Finally, check out the homies Brandon and Daniel of Sports Trap Radio on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at ueradiolive.com. Don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear and watch all of our partner shows, as well as the Broad Street Lines Ron Jaworski interview at warroomsports.blogspot.com. Really? In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newviberadio.com at 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. One more shout-out that I almost forgot. Definitely shout out to the ladies of Hoop Girls Radio. That's Michelle, Kia, and Reese. They had Jimmy and I on their show last night, and we had a ball talking a little bit of NBA basketball. So shout out to those ladies. But right now, Jimmy's going to give you guys some birthday shout outs.
It's my birthday. Yay!
What's up, good people?
Yo. I'm here to do it like I do it. And I'm doing it for TV.
Yeah. Anyway, one of y'all dropped
Harlem Shake.
Sound. But anyway, the birthdays are brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, go to our website, worldsports.com, and click on that DirecTV logo. Remember, football season will be coming up before you know it. The combines have already started, and you've got to get that Sunday ticket because we all know that you want to watch Manti Te'o on Sunday. So, make sure you get the Sunday ticket by going to DirecTV on our website, which is worldroomsports.com. Click on the logo and get a better TV experience at a discounted World Room Sports sign-up rate.
You better.
If you call yourself a sports fan, you got to have DirecTV, yo.
Yeah,
anyway, let's
no-brainer.
Move on to these birthdays this week, gentlemen. The first birthday I want to bring to you is one Mario Gabriel Andretti turned 73.
It's my birthday. Yay!
Mario Andretti, what comes to mind?
Yo, Mario old is the Mario Andretti, man, when it comes to, you know, the formula cars, he's the biggest name of my time, of my lifetime, you know, that I can remember. I mean, you had Al Unser Jr. and cats like that. But Mario Andretti is basically the first name that I think of when we're talking that kind of racing, you know, Indianapolis 500 type stuff. So shout out to the old head on his birthday.
The form.
Rio!
I think of the formula. I think of the DOC. But be Austin. Mario Andretti.
Yo, Mario Andretti was, well, he was the, I think he's the greatest IndyCar racer of all time. That's what I think. I mean, his son Michael gave a good run for his for the money. I mean, he's definitely up there as well. Al Unser is cool, but nobody did it like Mario, man. Mario, and then there's Michael Schumacher for Formula One. Those are my top two.
I only knew about Al Unser because he had a video game on Nintendo, but
I was trying
to look knowledgeable, but I didn't really know what I was talking about.
Al's actually still racing.
No, he's not.
Yeah, man. Mario Andretti, yeah, he was a beast. I mean, he's not an old head. He's like an old head. And I remember when I was a kid. He was around racing. Then his son was racing. Then he had like a nephew, if I'm not mistaken, racing. Then he had like a brother racing. And I think it was like 12
everybody.
Andretti's out there.
Yeah,
Mario,
everybody.
Mark, Michael, Lucas, Jonathan, Jose. Like, it was crazy.
Yeah, he probably had a mistress racing. Like, that's just what they do. The Andretti clan.
That's off the chain, man. I really have nothing else to say about Mario Andretti because I have no clue.
Yo. Mario Andretti. Mario Andretti's so old that Michael. That Michael Andretti's old.
Yo.
True.
Whoever that is. Yo. Anyway, the next birthday is
his son.
F both of them. Yo, one Adrian Delano Dantley. Adrian Dantley.
My
58
birthday.
Years
Yay.
Old. When I say the name Adrian Dantley, what comes to mind, gentlemen?
DC.
Where?
Mid-range game.
About to say, I didn't know he's from DC. I remember him as a scorer. He was a hell of a scorer in the pros. He can get you buckets. Doc Bay, I know you have something to say about Adrian Dantley. He's one of them off-brand players that you enjoyed to watch.
Yeah, the crazy thing about him, he is from D.C., played at DeMatha High School, and he was on those Pistons teams that couldn't get over a hump against the Celtics, and he was a great scorer. But he was like an undersized, small power forward, basically, and he used to get to the line. I remember as a kid just watching him at the foul line all the time. I'm like, yo, dude, homie stays at the line. And some people say he's underrated. Some people say he's overrated. Some people say he was a ball stopper in the former Carmelo Anthony, which is why the Pistons won. They say which is why the Pistons won once they got Aguirre and traded Dantley. But also, he was one of the few Pistons or teammates that refused to kiss Isaiah Thomas's butt cheeks. And Isaiah kind of resented him for that. He was like, man, F you. I'm not going to sweat you.
Isaiah
didn't like that.
He put up a lot of buckets. He had like four straight seasons where he averaged over 30. And, you know, a lot of cats, that was before he got to Detroit. He's playing for the Jazz. He used to put up, I mean, this dude got buckets. That's just the bottom line. He averaged over 34, four consecutive seasons, and then averaged 29.8 another season. Like, Adrian Dantley is a Hall of Famer and a prolific scorer. I think he had a little bit of defensive deficiency, so to speak.
Yeah,
which is why he didn't fit in
part.
With the Pistons.
That's the crazy part, Jen. That's why I can kind of understand what Akil was saying. Like, some people think he's underrated. Some people think he's overrated, probably because of his scoring prowess. You know, a lot of people think he gets overlooked in the history of the game. But then there's the other people who see what you just talked about, the deficiencies in his game, and probably thought that all he could do was score. So, you know, I can see both sides of that coin.
Shout out to AD. That's all that matters.
It takes a lot, man, to score at that high a clip and actually play defense. And we all know who did that, so we don't have to bring his name up. Adrian Dantley. Kobe dead. Adrian Dantley shot 54% from the floor. So to all of those that claim he was a ball stopper, yo, when you hit more than 50% of your shots, FOH, get out of here with that.
Hold up, so because you hit 50%, it means you're not a ball stopper?
It means you're still efficient. It means you're efficient.
But that doesn't mean you're not a ball stopper.
You can be efficient by wasting time that your coach don't want you to waste, though.
You're laughing, but the knock on ball stoppers, Pauls, is that they cause inefficiency, and usually they don't shoot that high of a percentage.
All I'm saying is this, man.
Shout out to Adrian,
man. And all that.
Shout out to Adrian.
You my homie, man, because anybody that scores at a high clip, you will defend them to no end. It doesn't matter what else they do. As long as they score a bucket at a high clip, you ride out.
Yo, because they add up points at the end of the game. You wish they add up assists and kisses, and Magic would have won, but.
Here you go.
They don't add up assists and they don't add up kisses to get a victory, brother. They add up points.
I know you put up points. You know what I mean? They don't add up push-offs either. Jordan wouldn't have won the last two championships. Anyway, the next birthday I want to talk about is one Eric Brian Lindros, who turns 40.
It's my birthday. Yay!
When I say the name Eric Lindros, what comes to mind?
Concussions.
Well, yeah, it is.
Constantly concussed.
Okay.
I always wanted to get an Eric Lindros jersey, only because he was like the top Flyers player, and I wanted to rock a Flyers jersey, and I wore 88 in football. But other than that, that was about it. He never lived up to his potential or ability.
Yeah, when I think of Eric Lindros, I think of like his potential, because I remember coming out, this guy was supposed to be like a bigger, stronger, faster Wayne Gretzky. Like he was supposed to.
Yo,
be
Yo, his
good.
Skate game was nice.
That's funny, you know, because I was about to say the same thing. Like I just remember back when he first came to Philadelphia, like the promise that he had and the hype that the city had at the time, and you know they thought it was on and. I mean, he was a very, very good hockey player, but, you know, he had a lot of injury problems, like Austin said, you know, had a lot of problems with concussions. And, you know, because think about it, he's just now turning 40, but it seems like he's been gone for a long time.
Yeah, it does.
I apologize for my laughter, gentlemen, but I was laughing in our chat room. Laurie McConnell said it's a big B word, so, you know. I mean, he's part. That's part of who he is too, though.
Yeah.
Towards the end of his career, he started acting like a, you know what I mean, a female dog. But nonetheless, the promise when he first came in the league was through the roof.
Yeah. All right,
I gotta hear what you gentlemen have to say about this last birthday. This last birthday is one Richard Henry Blood, better known as Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, turned 60.
The Dragon.
Coming for you, nigga. So what y'all got to say about Ricky Steamboat?
Yo, shout out to the NWA and Jim Crockett Promotions.
Yo, back when I used to watch wrestling. Ricky Ricky Steamboat was in WWF, wasn't he?
Nah, he wrestled NWA.
He was one of them flip-floppers.
Yeah, he started in the NWA.
Who cut the check at the time, yo?
Yeah. I remember watching him mostly in the WWF, and, you know, he... Ricky Steamboat, when he got on the top ropes, didn't he give you, like, the I love you sign, like the Hawaiians do? Or was that Jimmy Superfly Snuka?
That was Snuka.
That was Snuka, doggy.
All right, smack Steamboat, then. I take
damn! I remember Steamboat, because that was the greatest wrestler of all time, one Ric Flair. And he was a fake Bruce Lee. You know. The whole dragon thing and all that, but he definitely was all time great. But
wasn't he like an intercontinental champion? I think he was an intercontinental champion.
Yeah, he was intercontinental for a minute. The funny thing, he was in the NWA for a long time, and he was only in WWF for like 3 years. But I guess WWF had it locked at that point.
Yeah, 3 years he was in WWF was like at their peak, like 85, like 89 or 88, somewhere around there. That's when Hulkamania, his overrated ass, was like, you know, very crazy.
Come on, Hulkamaniacs. So, come on now, brother. Jimmy, brother. Come on.
Anyway, man, enough of that, man. Shout out to Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, man.
Talk about Thunder Lips, man.
He was an Intercontinental Champion. When he was in NWA, he was a heavyweight champion, so he's definitely a legend. His son is a wrestler now, according to Kyrie in the chat room, so that's how you know you're getting old, when we giving a dude a birthday shout-out, and his son now participates in that same sport or entertainment, whatever you want to call it. So, those are the birthdays of the week. Dev, tell everybody what happened while they were on the grind.
All right, while y'all were on the grind, it's brought to you by Bay Financial Services. Go to our website, worldroomsports.com. Click on the Sponsors tab. Check out Bay Financial Services website and get your money straight. This week, while y'all were on the grind, Alabama offered a scholarship to an eighth grader. Nick Saban... You know, on signing day, was extending some offers to a lot of players around the country, and one of them,
just happened to be a phenom from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So, you know, he's trying to start a little something with LSU. The guy's name is Dylan Moses. He's an eighth grader.
Yo, read his stats, man.
Actually, he was already offered a scholarship by LSU last summer. And he made the trip out to Tuscaloosa with his dad to check out Alabama. Like, why are they courting kids who are in the eighth grade?
Wait,
like, do you
hold
guys
on.
Think that
I understand.
Going a little too far at this point?
It is going too far. It's ridiculous. Nick Saban is making a media play. I mean, making a media play. We'll clown it and knock it, but it's a major media play. But the kids, he's 6'2", 215, and runs like a 4.5 40.
You run a 4.5. I mean, I saw some of his highlights. He really didn't look fast, but he was
eight o'clock.
He was just bigger than everybody, and they couldn't tackle him. And he was just laying hits on people from the linebacker position and just running over people from the running back position.
It's something ridiculous. It's like a 4.5 or 4.6, something an eighth grader shouldn't be running. Yeah.
Listen, man, I think it's, you know, it is what it is.
It's the chicken.
The world we live in. We love to build people up to tear them down. So even beyond the chicken, man, this is a situation where it's like as a country, we're so competitive that we're willing to pretty much do anything just to try to get the upper hand. And that's in everything we do, whether it's business, sports, politics. It's like, you know, the rule book is out the window at this point.
Yeah.
So the thing is, this will become the norm.
If he's a bust, they're going to pull the scholarship if he's a bust.
I was about to say, because I don't really know how much of a media play it is, because one of the 2013 signees and a 2014 watch list person, you know, they recruited them, offered them scholarships when they were freshmen, so that was one more year from this guy, and they followed through with it. They were serious with it. But like Akil said, they're going to build this dude up for the next 4 years. He comes there or goes to LSU, whoever promised him a scholarship, and he takes it. And if he's not that good, they're going to snatch his scholarship up. Meanwhile, on these visits, they're telling him to keep his grades up. Like, they care about
they're
that.
Probably giving him access to trainers and all kinds of other, you know,
and
kind
and
of
deer antler spray and
okay. Deer, yeah,
parents,
yeah,
yeah. They're building them up. It's like they're
the cream in the clear.
They're going to give them
this goes to a bigger societal issue in my opinion personally.
Hey,
but
Jim,
it is what it is. Kids don't have an opportunity to be kids anymore.
Do you think his visit consisted of the same type of stuff that Jesus Shuttlesworth visits consisted of?
Yo!
You think they threw two white girls in front of him?
Yo!
Let him do his thug thizzle? Come on, young boy. All right, so next thing that happened while you guys were on the grind, we were reading and talking about a story that came out this week about A-Rod and his charitable foundation. The Boston Globe did a review of athletes and their charities. The quote-unquote acceptable minimum for charities is to give 65% of the revenues to the actual charitable programs. They said Alex Rodriguez's charity gives 1% of its earnings to charitable foundations. Now, here's a little statement that came out. It said, a foundation started by New York Yankees third baseman Alex Rodriguez gave only 1% of proceeds to charity during its first year of operation in 06, then stopped submitting mandatory financial reports altogether to the IRS and was stripped of his tax-exempt status. Yet, the group's website still tells visitors the A-Rod Family Foundation is a nonprofit organization. Now, before y'all talk about this, let me give you one example. They were in 2006, according to the IRS, the foundation gave $5,000 to Jay-Z's Sean Carter Scholarship Fund and $90 to a Little League baseball club in Miami. He gave them $90. Yo, he probably booked them all T-shirts. $90?
Why $90? That's so random, though. That's like,
yo, he gave them $90.
That's ridiculous, yo.
Like,
yo,
did anybody think
up.
I was about to say $90,000? He gave them $90.
You can't even get a quality tooth for $90. I mean, you can't get a Myra.
Not in Miami. You can't get a Myra.
at the end of the day, man, this is one of those situations where I don't know if A-Rod knew about the specifics of what was going on. And a lot of times with these athletes, that you know, they're businesses themselves and they have people running everything for them. But the numbers in this situation just make it seem so bad.
I mean, but it's like a story that comes out about A-Rod every other week that makes him
nothing
a fraud
ever positive.
At life. Yeah, he's like, they're making him out to be a fraud at life in general.
Yeah, but you know why? Because a lot of people are jealous of the fact that this man made $500 million in two contracts.
But that's
at the end of the day,
out of 500,
no matter
million.
What happens with A-Rod, we always can go back to that. He's winning in life.
He's winning.
Yeah, but I think what's crazy is that, you know, he's made $500 million, and, like, the fact that, whether he knew or not, that the Little League team only received $90, like, that's just sad, man.
He could have driven by a park, seeing kids playing baseball, and went over there and went in his pocket and gave them more than $90.
Yo.
Jimmy,
I
he could have probably found more on the floor of his Ferrari under the seat.
Yo, he probably wipes his ass on a daily basis with more than $90. Like, but I think it's one of those situations where his name is attached to it, and it does seem horrendous.
What?
The
point that you made is it. I mean, a lot of these athletes, they hear that other athletes have foundations. Their financial advisors, their agents go to them with a package deal and say, this is something that you should do because it's trendy. They throw the athlete's mother and father or family members or whatever within this foundation. And then that's that. Now, mind you, these people that are in the foundation as family members have no experience running a 501c3 or a tax-exempt status entity. And so they're just looking at the dollars flowing through. There's no checks and balances. So there's a whole bunch of money with no checks and balances. I highly doubt that A-Rod knew that all that was given were these sums. But at the end of the day, that doesn't make him any less responsible because it has his name tied to it.
And
it
bucks with him. And Devin made the best point, which is that, you know, he has people – well, he should have people around him that, you know, handle his business accordingly, but it's something always popping out about this guy. He needs to look at his inner circle because if I had the kind of means that he has, I mean, he should be shielded from all this. The bottom line is they pay him that money just to concentrate on baseball, but there's so many other distractions in his life and, you know –
Well, this is like you say, this is proof. This is proof that his team and his financial team isn't really in place because it should be a seamless machine. It should be agent.
They stop reporting altogether. Like, bro, like who is going to get when you have?
I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, Jim, to know too that you know individuals can get rich off of a nonprofit organization. So that must have been their only goal. Whoever is running it for him, it must have been the only goal to get personally.
He might as well go hire Maverick Carter, man.
Yeah. The funny thing, I was just about to bring LeBron's team up. Like, as much flack as they get and you know, they're really young. But, yo, they're running
they get
way more like
young.
A well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
Let's keep it at being. They get flack
those young
for
boys
being
get
young
busy,
and being African-American. And
yo, they get flack for being young. They get flack for being with LeBron. They get flack for kind of being a little drawn. But that doesn't mean they're not solid in performance and what they need to do for LeBron and his brand.
No,
like, they handle business.
Talk about with them, with LeBron's brand, it's not like it's difficult. You don't have to go out and chase deals. Deals are chasing you, but at the same time, they still have
to
make sure things don't
get
like this.
Make the right decision. Yeah.
And things don't get fraudulent. You know what I'm saying? Like, A-Rod, I'm pretty sure it wasn't difficult for him to do things either.
You see what I'm saying? That is like, what you said is true. A-Rod himself was once LeBron. A-Rod was the best baseball player in the world. He was making all the money. I mean, you know, it's like, but there's always something negative coming out. Whether it's, even to the point where he was trying to get yams on the game, like, how many players can do that? But when it comes to A-Rod, it's like made a big story. Like, I guarantee you there's players in every sport that do that.
Yeah.
I think what it is, though, he tries that, put on the front, like, he's this perfect guy or he doesn't have any flaws. And then all of a sudden you catch him in compromised situations and like, oh, yeah, we were shooting upstairs. I didn't know we were shooting up. We were just shooting.
I think people genuinely don't like him. He must be an a-hole because I don't think people like him.
A-Rod, a-hole. Yeah, well, everything that comes out about dude is ugly. And speaking of ugly, the Oakland Raiders defensive tackle Desmond Bryant was arrested Sunday morning. I actually thought he was arrested on the West Coast, but he was actually arrested in Miami and charged with misdemeanor criminal mischief. Supposedly, he had gone over to his neighbor's house, inebriated, and caused a quote-unquote commotion. Not really sure what the commotion was, but his mugshot was one for the ages, man. Like, we talked about it. We made a video about it on we did a few good minutes in the War Room about it on WarRoomSportsTV.com. If you guys can get to our Facebook page, Facebook.com/WarRoomSports, and take a look in our photos. Here's a photo of this man's mugshot. And, fellas, how would you describe this dude's mugshot? Like,
I'll go. It looks like, I'm just saying, like, not even trying to be funny, but just to compare what the picture shows to what, anatomically, what it looks like. It looks like somebody's flexing their quadricep, and then they put a head on top of the quadricep, and then a body underneath it. That's what it looks like.
That's an interesting description, Kiel. I've never heard it put that way. I thought that the gentleman had a Wales Richard in his esophagus. And,
yeah, because why is his neck so big? He looks like a snake trying to swallow a pig or something, and it got caught.
To reiterate what I said on the video, the most disturbing thing to me is the fact that this gentleman doesn't have a shirt on. Why are you in a mugshot shirtless, for one? Like, what are you doing?
He went to Harvard.
That means it probably was a situation, Jim, where when the cops came to get him from his neighbor's house, he probably was over there without a shirt on. So nobody ever stopped to get this gentleman a shirt before they took him to the station or something. I don't know.
He went to Harvard.
I know, right? He has a raggedy beard. His tongue is like, it seems like he's lost control of his tongue. Like maybe he just had a seizure or something.
Pop the molly, I'm sweating.
To me, he actually looks dead. And like I was telling you guys the other day, I kind of thought that this was like a cover-up mugshot, you know, while they found, you know, just to hold us off while they found a way to explain to us how they beat this man to death. Because I don't even think he's standing up in this picture, man. I think he's laying down, and then he took a picture of the body. Somebody said that he looked like a thumb.
Yeah, a thumb.
A Jack and the Giant Beanstalk thumb.
Yeah.
Yo,
this is a very unfortunate picture. But do you guys think this is the greatest mugshot of all time,
actually,
or is it ranked up there somewhere?
Yeah. It's top five that I've ever seen.
Time.
Yeah, because we've seen some bad ones. We've seen some very bad ones. I think we got to do a.
Was horrible.
Yeah, we got to do a mugshot bracket.
Think about the locker room. Think about the locker room during the when the season
yo,
starts.
He's done, yo,
he's done, yo. Mess out of dude.
Yo, he's a rookie too, right?
Think about training camp.
I was about to say, if I was a prankster in training camp, when he walks in, that mugshot would be posted up on everybody's locker.
Everywhere. Everywhere.
Like,
a 100 of those photos sitting around.
And then the chat, they're gonna be like, "Yo, Desmond, you need a thigh pad for your neck, homie."
He's had a thigh pad for his neck. All right, so the last story while you're on the grind. This is a very unfortunate situation. I'm sure you guys remember a few months ago when we reported that former WNBA player and former Tennessee Vol, Shamiqua Holzclaw, she had gotten arrested for actually shooting at her ex-girlfriend's car, who's WNBA player Jennifer Lacey. If you don't know who Jennifer Lacey is, please Google her. So basically,
you'll thank us.
She's officially been charged, guys, and she has 6 counts: 2 counts of aggravated assault, 1 count of criminal damage in the first degree, 2 counts of criminal damage in the second degree, and possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. Remember, she beat the girl's car with a baseball bat and then shot at the car while the girl was sitting in the car. So if she's convicted on all counts, she faces up to 65 years in prison. Y'all got any thoughts on this, man? She used to be on top. And now, it was like all good just a week ago.
I would blame an N1 player that used to date her, but I ain't gonna get into that. I'm gonna just say that she has a history of mental mental illness. He could have saved her. Mental illness and you know, things of that nature. And so I hope, you know, obviously that kind of played a role in this. And I hope that, you know, within her punishment, because she is accountable for her actions, but there's something that is doled out by the justice system to give her some corrective, not just some healing, man, help her mental state.
Give her some act right. Whether or not that's the case, they're going to use that defense either way, just because she has documented history of depression and stuff like that. So get ready to hear that.
Leroy makes a point. He says that never been the same since her grandma died. She was the one who raised her. So that kind of, and I guess when you factor in the fact, that she had dealt with mental issues, and that probably just set her off. That probably was a trigger and just made her snap. Because I saw pictures of the vehicle that she shot at, and she was trying to lay the murder game down, B.
Yeah,
she was on her wing.
Where's the attempted murder charge?
She was on her wing.
Yeah, she put that Wayne in. She was trying to lay the murder game down. That wasn't like, you know. So, I mean, you know, I it's a sad situation, man. Yeah. Shout out to Ezra who just joined our chat room.
The crazy thing is, with the yams, once again, like, you know, male or female, once you fall
victim to yams. I've never seen a woman go crazy over yams, though.
Listen, you know, man, they love them just like we do. What's her girlfriend's name?
Jennifer Lacey.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
yeah, that's a good point, Kill. That's a good point. But look, everybody, check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. I know, right? Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message about the company, the show, or to inquire about sponsorships and advertising opportunities, or even some partnerships. Y'all know y'all want to be down. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing our site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All Sphere and Sports and More blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app, and to watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to do that, you can sign in through your Facebook and Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. If you want to call in and speak to us directly, the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline is now open. That number is 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. You're looking at that photo.
All I'm saying is I shoot up Jennifer Lacey, but that's another story.
Shoot the box.
I'm going to shoot that club all up.
Let's get into some hot topics, man. Hot topics are brought to you by Audible. If your schedule is too hectic to read as much as you really want to read, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you got to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free, while looking at Jennifer Lacey at the same time. Real quick, man, spring training. Bryce Harper from the Nationals, man, this young dude, I know it's only spring training, but the dude is on fire down there, man. He kind of messed it up for a minute there. He was batting 750. Now he's batting 600. He's batting 600, and their questions going around, you know, of course it's going to depend on whether he can sustain this once the regular season starts, but do y'all think it's possible for Bryce Harper in his, you know, second season, first full season, to actually win a National League MVP?
Absolutely not.
Test him before the season starts.
You said absolutely not?
Oh? Yeah, absolutely not.
Why would you say that?
Looking at Bryce Harper, I believe he's 20 years old. He's not even done growing. I think he's a tremendous talent. I see MVPs potentially in his future. But I don't think that he is the player that will – I don't think he's settled into the player that, you know, will win all of those accolades.
I can read through everything Austin's saying, yo.
160
games. He's saying that he plays for Washington. So,
the Expos. Plays for the Expos?
Yeah, that's basically what you're saying.
Yeah, I definitely don't agree. This is baseball. This is a whole different ball game. Like, in some sports, like, it would be, you know, you would kind of sound like a prisoner of the moment to say something like that. But in baseball, they don't care about reputation, how long you've been in the league. I mean, look at Mike Trout last season.
Man.
I mean, I think it's
Trout mouth heathen.
I just know they're getting a deal considering he's making less than $1 million and the player that he's already become, you know. But
he is. I will give him this. As a non-baseball fan and going to a Washington Expos or Montreal Nationals game, he's one of those hit-on-command dudes. And when I say that, I mean, it's like Manny or Barry. Those are my hit-on-command guys. When you're not really a fan of the game and you don't appreciate some of the nuances such as you do, Dev, or you do, Jimmy, you want to see hitting. Like, Bryce.
That's what he does.
He steps to the plate. He definitely gets hit. He hits the ball.
Now, he has some deficiencies sometimes in the field, but he has a cannon for an arm. And maybe that's why he gets lured into some of the stuff that he does. Like, he's the guy who's not going to hit the cutoff man all the time because dude can sometimes throw it damn near from the wall and get it to home plate, you know, on his own. So he doesn't really use cutoff men. But think about Jim, think about how many.
His future is so bright, yo.
Yeah. Think about how many people looked at Mike Trout as getting screwed last year, and they think the only reason he didn't win is because Cabrera got the Triple Crown. But there are a lot of baseball pundits out there who aren't as impressed with the Triple Crown as, you know, others, and still feel that Mike Trout should have won the MVP last year
as a
rookie.
Though, I have a couple points. For one,
I don't think his age matters at all.
In our chat room, Ezra said that he is the LeBron James of baseball in terms of talent, hype, and skill set.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
I mean, this is the comparison, so this is how good this guy has a chance to be. And
he
it's
hustles
funny
too,
because
man. He doesn't
realize.
He doesn't play like people's giving it to him already. He's going to get it.
Yeah, that's because he ain't making that money yet. Let's see what happens when he gets the big contract. When baseball, he might get a 15-year contract. But
I despise the fact that he plays for the Nationals.
It's funny because those guys have ruined baseball. When I say those guys, you don't know who I'm talking about in a minute. Anytime somebody like starts off or gets in a tear like that, the first thing you think is, I wonder if he's juicing. It's like.
Yeah.
That's how bad they ruined baseball. That's the first thought that comes to mind.
Yeah, but you knew this dude was the truth, though. They couldn't wait for him to finish high school, so he didn't. I was like, man, we got to get out of here. There's nothing for us down here.
He said, we got to do this some other time.
No doubt. That's basically what's going on in spring training for the Washington Nationals. The favorites, might I add, to represent the NL in the World Series. We'll see how that goes down. It's a little different when you're playing with the radar on your back. So we'll see if they can, you know, go a little farther in the postseason than they did last year. I pretty much know what the answer is going to be. But did any of you fellas catch the Oscars on Sunday?
No.
Of course, James Bond was the theme.
No, I mean, because you guys know that Seth MacFarlane, you know, creator of the Family Guy and Ted, was hosting. So, you know, it's a lot of mixed reaction afterwards. A lot of people thought that he went too far with some of his jokes. But when you hire Seth MacFarlane, what do you expect? Like, what did they
basically
expect him to do? So I actually thought that he was really good. A lot of people, for some reason, were saying that he was terrible. I didn't really understand that. There were some big winners in the whole thing. I know you saw Django Unchained. They didn't win any of the – well, they won a couple of awards, but not – they only won one award for acting, and that was Christoph Waltz. How did you think his performance was in the movie?
You know, two things. Number one, I thought he played an excellent role, brought a lot of character to the movie, and you really enjoyed his very, very dry and sarcastic humor and wit, you know, kind of placed in such a serious, like, backdrop. The whole movie was funny. The whole
same
movie
witty,
was funny.
Same wit he had in Inglourious
Basterds. Yeah, it was, and that was going to be my second point before you interjected it. He plays the same character. He plays the same character in every flick. And as I go back through my mind and I now remember some of the things I've seen him in, he's always that guy. He is always that guy. So
yeah, he always gets to play the guy from his country, so he never has to change his accent or anything like that. I'm not knocking him as an actor. I personally think that award should have gone to somebody who didn't even get nominated and from the same movie. I thought Leo DiCaprio should have won Best Supporting Actor
for
his
Calvin Candy.
Yeah,
Calvin Candy was dead dude, and he had some arm candy on his arm. Never mind.
Yeah, but no, I would advise you guys to go see Argo. My little sheet, I did picks, and I was trying to explain to somebody that picks are a little different than predictions. Predictions, you know, is when you're trying to guess what they're going to vote for and who's going
right
to win. I didn't care about that. I was just doing my own picks.
This is your opinion.
And I did the six major categories, and actually five of my six categories actually came out as the winner. And the one that I didn't win was Christoph Waltz. And I knew he was going to win because he won the Golden Globe for the same role. But, you know, he just wasn't my pick. But I would advise you guys to go see Argo, it's actually coming out on DVD and Blu-ray now. I thought it was the best picture of the year, one best picture of the year. Trust me. Check that joint out. You'll be on the edge of your seat the whole time.
I really can't speak for it. I didn't watch the Oscars. I was watching the AVN Awards. So, you know.
And I applaud you. I applaud you for that, because that is a great award ceremony and show with some of the best talent in the world being celebrated.
Well, it was one.
That's all I have to add.
There was one story out of the Oscars that I know you guys did see, because we spoke about it a little bit this week, and that was the tweet by The Onion. You know, TheOnion.com, who usually does, like, satirical stories and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They tweeted about the youngest best actress nominee ever, Quvenzhané Wallace. They tweeted during the ceremony, "Everyone else seems afraid to say it, but that Quvenzhané Wallace is kind of a cunt, right?" Can I say cunt on the radio? I mean, I'm just quoting.
You're
That's
quoting.
What they said.
Yeah, you're quoting.
So this is what they said about a 9-year-old. Like, did you guys have any problem with this? Of course they retracted it, apologized for it the next day. But did you guys have a problem with that tweet?
I personally did not have a problem with it, and for several reasons. One, I'm tired of people saying stuff and retracting it. That's their opinion. You're known for your satirical opinions. That's what people come to you for. It's expected. Well, then they went a little hard, but then that leads into the next point. They had to understand the context surrounding her. Number one, you're dealing with a child as the subject of your opinion. So you're automatically down, you know, because of that. Then you're dealing with a black child, which, let's face it, in this world and in this country, race is still very much an issue and people are sensitive to it. So now you've called a 9-year-old black girl a cunt. That's never going to fly. Even if I'm not offended, that's never going to fly. That's never going to fly. So.
My opinion is that, you know, I'm one who can care less about censorship. I don't believe in censorship. But I do believe in, like, there's certain people who should be off limits, and that's children. I ain't killing no children or old people. So, it's like,
yo, who
but
be out there 1 o'clock in the morning?
But here's the thing, though. Keeping it a beam, man. Some of these young cats now, 9 years old or not, they are cunts. And, but whether that needed to be, you know, spoken in that form, especially with as many followers as they have. But, again, look at the source. It's The Onion.
Yeah. I mean, like I was saying, Austin, like, it is The Onion, but they don't usually go that hard. That stuff is just funny. You know, they'll change up a story, make it sound real, but I've never actually seen them just go at somebody like that. So, you know, they caught a lot of
flack
for it.
Went kind
of actually waiting for Sharpton and Jackson to get involved. I haven't heard anything from them yet. Maybe, you know, not enough of an attention grabber for them. Maybe the apology came too quick.
Y'all can say what y'all want to say about my man Reverend Al, but Reverend Al is there at the drop of a dime, baby. You know what I'm saying? Yo, somebody mess your bill up at a restaurant, you call Al, he'd be there in a couple minutes. But
this is
a sad situation. But let me ask you a question, though. Did you watch any of the young girl's interviews and how she was acting?
That was part of the point.
And she seemed kind of arrogant. You know, and I say that to other people, and they're like, well, she should be. She's her first movie ever, and she's nominated for an Oscar. I'm like, well, that doesn't really give you the right to kind of act that way. But, you know, arrogance really doesn't bother me. But it's one of those things where, just like we say to The Onion, well, if you're going to say something, you know what I'm saying, we don't believe in censorship, and we don't believe in political correctness, but you have to realize people are going to get on you for it. See,
right.
At the same time with her, a person like me, I don't care about arrogance, but you have to realize that a lot of people out there do, so people might call you a cunt or call you this and that.
Yeah.
But, you know, she might not understand that at 9 years old, though. So.
She doesn't, but you can tell right now that sooner or later she's going to need a lesson in humility.
Right.
And that's evident just watching her speak. You know what I mean? So I'm going to leave it at that.
She's definitely a confident little one. She's definitely a confident little one. That could be a good thing, and, you know, the way people act in this world, that could be a bad thing. So.
Absolutely.
It's already started off as a bad thing.
All right. So, yeah, you know, we're about to put a nice little bow on Black History Month, man. So we just wanted to salute a couple of athletes who had some kind of significance in Black history. So I'll go first, fellas. I just wanted to give a Black history salute and shout out to George Dixon. He's a boxer. George Dixon was a Black Canadian professional boxer and the first Black world champion in any weight class. And, of course, he was also the first ever Canadian-born boxing champion. He won the Bantamweight Championship in 1888, but he wasn't officially considered the champ until knocking out Nunc Wallace in England in 18 rounds in 1890. Yo, this dude's record was 71, 30, and 56 draws.
Yo.
Wait.
How many draws did he have?
56. And he had 6 no contests, and he had 37 knockouts. The dude was only 5'3" and 87 pounds. So shout out to little man. Shout out the little man. Shout out the little man. He's 5'3". He knocked out 37 cats, man. He tied more dudes than he knocked out. Or
that story's not real, yo. They made that up. That's somebody put that on Wikipedia. That's not real. You got that from The Onion?
Yo. You said The Onion, and then they called him a cunt. But shout out to George Dixon, man. Anybody else want to salute somebody?
Yo, man, shout out to my man Arthur Wharton. He became the first ever Black professional soccer player, or football, as they say internationally. He was a Ghanaian. He was born in Ghana in 1865, died a pauper in 1930, pulling coal cars. He was a bit of a Wilt, a mini Wilt Chamberlain dude, because he went to England with the intention of receiving training to become a preacher. However, he turned out to be a great athlete. He became the first man in the world to run 100 yards in under 10 seconds. He later became the which was a world record in that event. Later, he went on to become the first professional or Black professional cricketer. So he was a cricket player.
His dude.
And then Arthur also set a record as a cyclist. So he was a record-setting cyclist. So your man was the first. He was a first in soccer, a first in cricket, a first in 100-yard dash, and a record-setting cyclist.
It sounds like he was also the first on HGH as well, if he did all these things.
Yeah.
Yo, but he was going to be a preacher. How'd they find out he's such a great athlete? Like his Thurman was trash and they ran him out the church.
He went to baptize somebody, put him in water, and flipped him around easily. They said,
baptized, baptized the wrong person.
All right, well, salute to him. Anybody else?
Arthur Ward.
Yeah, I give a shout out to my man Jack Johnson, the first black heavyweight champion. Jack Johnson had a professional record of 80 wins, 45 wins by knockout, 13 losses, 12 draws, and 14 no contests.
Damn.
The good brother Jack had 114 fights and fought until the age of 50. And one thing about Jack is not only was he a hard knockout puncher, but he was very flashy and controversial for the times. Like, these are back in the, I mean, this guy, this is back in like 1920, 1930, and he had an affinity for the white women because it was shunned upon so much by the white people. And obviously we all know how blacks were treated back in the 20s. He would like try to rub it in the face of the white man by walking around with a nice piece of pork, I mean a white woman, on his arm just to showcase, just to show off what he could do. So
yeah, that's
he
a brave dude.
Yeah. And
you
he
think
ended up
cause
being
you
killed.
Think because your hand's nice that you can go around agitating
exactly.
people like that, man?
Yep.
People hang you from a tree.
He died in 1946 in a car accident. He died in 1946 from a car accident. I think a white man probably ran into his whip with a Mack truck or something.
Hold up, PJ. You know how the whips were back then, like the Al Capone specials. Some cars ain't go fast enough to kill nobody.
I know.
In the car accident, unless
they
do up or something.
Oh, you want to walk around with my daughter, do you? Okay, let's ring that bell. Let's ring that bell.
Yeah, they rung his bell, all right. But shout out to Jack, man. First black heavyweight champion.
Man. Mine is actually someone that everybody knows about, and here's why I actually picked this. And I want to talk about Bill Russell, but not Bill Russell the athlete. Bill Russell the humanitarian as well as the coach. Let's talk about Bill Russell the coach. We often talk about the Rooney Rule and whether it's needed and how in the NFL, you know, minority hires are few and far between. Bill Russell won a championship as a coach 20 years before the NFL even hired an African-American coach. Not before they won, before they hired an African-American coach. Bill Russell was an NBA champion as a coach. And it also goes to show how basketball is the greatest sport when it comes to inclusion of races and all other kind of minorities, ethnic backgrounds, Chris Bosh or sexual orientation. So I just want to salute, Bill Russell. Because he was an athlete that, you know, fought for a lot of things in terms of race relations. When now guys are more worried about their brand and their image, Bill Russell didn't care about that. He fought for what he thought was right. And, you know, is a legend in terms of his basketball prowess, but also from a coaching standpoint, because he coached the ABA and, you know, had a winning record there, so he knew what he was doing. So shout out to Bill Russell. Oh, and also I had a second person I wanted to shout out, and I'll be very brief with this, and that's Tia Northfleet, because she's making history now as we speak, and she's a friend to the War Room. So shout out to Tia Northfleet, and you can go to our YouTube channel and listen to our interview with her. That's it. I'm done.
Yes, yes. And I want to shout out Ray Emery. He is one of the few African-American hockey players in the National Hockey League. He's only 30, playing close to 9 years. He played 1 year with the Philadelphia Flyers. He's from Canada. And he's married to a singer, actress, model, Keisha Shante, who's also from Canada. So shout out to homie for holding it down as one of the few African-American hockey players.
Keisha Shante, huh?
No. Is she from what part of Canada is she from?
Brooklyn.
She's from the bottom of Canada. All right, that's cool. So that's our Black History Month salute. Since they only give us 28 days, we had to get that in before the month was over. So, again, shout out to those people. Let's talk a little bit about some NFL stuff.
Hey,
but before, yes, sir.
I was letting you know we have a brother Robert on the line who wants to talk a little NFL right before you jump into it.
Robert.
What's up? All
right. Well, we can get Robert on the line. Robert from – well, let me read this this sponsor real quick. NFL Wrap is brought to you by Fanatics. For the best in your favorite team's merchandise and apparel, shop Fanatics. Shopping Fanatics is easy. Just go to our site at warroomsports.com, click on the Fanatics logo on our main page or on our sponsors page, and get the latest in NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, NCAA gear, and more. Okay, so before we even get into it, let's get Robert from San Diego on the line and see what he wants to rap about. Rob, what's going on? You're in the war room.
What's up, y'all? Philly Cat.
Rob, what's good, man?
Who needs ESPN? We got y'all, man. Thanks, man.
Right.
No,
Salute.
Salute to Rob from sunny San Diego. He's on our good side. What's up?
What's up, man?
How's the weather out there, yo?
Oh, the weather's ridiculous, man. Man,
it
never rains in Southern California.
We were in L.A. last week. It was a little chilly. I mean, you go out there and you're expecting a little more, but you know, I've been to San Diego. I know how it is out there. So what's on your mind, Rob?
What's on my mind? Dang. I think it had to be about the combine, because I know somebody commented and said because I think the combine is overrated.
Right.
Yeah.
Mhm.
Oh yeah.
I agree. I completely agree with that.
Slave auction.
I totally agree as well, because I think a lot of people put too much stock into the measurables of the combine instead of, you know, primarily putting stock in what this player did on the field. Of course, we're going to talk about Manti Te'o a little bit because, you know, a lot of people are down on him because of his combine numbers. But, you know, if you just go back and you look at his career, he was a pretty decent linebacker, except for when he went up against what many think is an NFL-type front against Alabama. So that was the first thing to raise the red flags, and then you had the whole story come out about his personality, which raised some more red flags. Then he went to the combine, you know, ran a slow 40, but, you know, he's an inside linebacker. How fast do you really need him to be? But he opted out of things like the bench press. You do need your inside linebackers to be strong. So I'm not sure what it's going to do for his stock, but I definitely agree with you that the combine is a little overrated in some people's eyes.
You said you wanted to say something about the whole Ray Lewis and LT thing?
First of all, thanks for bringing that up a long time ago. Yeah, man.
What?
Much respect to Ray Lewis, man. But, you know, first of all, I'm a diehard Eagle fan, like some of y'all. And my unfortunately, my dad is a Giant fan. And ever since... from New York, and ever since I was a kid, he told me stories about LT.
LT was that boy.
Yeah, LT was a bad boy, man.
If I put in a shotgun three wide receivers out there, what's Ray Lewis gonna do?
So I don't know. I mean, if we're talking about coverage, I actually think Ray Lewis is a better cover than LT. LT got after that passer, and when he got to the passer, he usually broke his neck. Broke something. He was feared. He was definitely feared by quarterbacks in the league.
Y'all to ask Joe Theismann, who's a better linebacker.
Keep in mind, every game LT was snorted on that. LT was snorted on good pure cocaine, so that's why he had so much anger in him. He was on PEDs, bro. Oh yeah. He probably got suspended 5 times in his career for substance abuse of cocaine.
Yeah, and
if Ray Lewis was on cocaine, let me tell you something. If Ray Lewis was on cocaine, dog, he would jump through your TV every time you look at a game. He's doing all this off of antler liquid. And all this is from a deer antler liquid.
No, but the funny thing is the example that Rob used, like I said, I think Lewis is probably the better cover linebacker, but you put either one of them on a receiver and they both getting, you know, destroyed, so it really doesn't matter.
Neither one of them. The only receiver he could probably guard is probably like a Freddie Mitchell type receiver. because he runs slow.
Oh, wow.
How about King Thresh?
Jason Avant.
Jason Avant
runs
slower than Jason Peters.
Anyway, he'll catch the pass, but the linebackers will be right there with him.
Yo, Jason Peters is faster than Jason Avant, yo.
Well, Patrick, man. 4-7.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, man.
He ran a 4-7? Jason Avant ran a 4-7?
No, 4-8.
Jason Avant, actually, Avant ran like, was clocked at a 4-5.
That was his mom that was on the clock.
kill. I didn't see the tape. I don't believe that.
Yeah, might have been his shadow.
Like, I looked this up a couple years ago and we were talking
I've actually heard that before. I just don't believe a second of it.
Somebody
said go, and then like a second later they hit the clock.
Exactly. They hit the zone. He was at 20 yards. He was 20 yards in. They said, oh, shit. And then it hit the clock.
All right. Hey, Rob, man, thanks for your call, man. We'll wrap to you later.
Jason Avant's 40 time. Jason Avant's 40 time was 4.73.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds about what it looked like.
Yeah, I've seen 4.5, and I've seen 4.7.
Yeah, so because they tell you different ones. They give you a combine time and then
whatever
else in his life he's been clocked. Yeah, but Jason Avant.
Everybody's better at pro day.
Fresh.
Yeah.
So let's keep with the theme of the combine, like the honey badger. Yo, a lot of people, that's like his name now, the honey badger.
Got to get rid of that. He got to do anything he can do to get that off his back.
He's actually, you know, they put a lot of stock in this combine. He's actually done some stuff that's, you know, is going to make it difficult for a lot of NFL franchises to pass up on him. He ran a sub 4.5 40. He was, you know, he moved his hips pretty well in the coverage drills and things like that. He just overall looked pretty good, especially for a player who's been off for a year and dealing with some substance abuse problems. So, Austin, I know that's, you know, that's the D-backs. That's your thing. How do you think he did in the?
You know, I think that footwork-wise, He's middle of the road, you know, not great feet, not bad feet, decent back pedal, hips are okay. He's very quick and he's very good in space. I think with his size and height, he's going to end up as a slot corner or a nickel. That's where his highest and best use will be. And then you're drafting somebody that can not only cover the slot, but can be a kick returner or a punt returner.
Deion Sanders said he's a playmaker and he's going to be a baller. Should we listen to Deion just because he was, or should we take, you know?
he's a terrible receiver.
He's such an athlete, they have to put him on the field.
Right.
So, yeah, that's why the number is 23. Yeah, he was a D-back that he couldn't hack it, so they switched him to the offense.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nobody ever get behind him.
Deion actually, if you watch Deion and look at what he talks about talent, Deion bigs up people who look up to him. So if you're a quarterback and look at Deion and you kiss his butt, then he's going to, like, get in front of that camera and talk about you like you're the greatest thing since
played. So he's a marketing rep.
It's a little co-op thing they got going on. You know what I mean? So when they get in the camera, they talk about Deion as their role model.
It's a pyramid scheme.
I think
it's a pyramid scheme.
His hip movement in the drills, Austin – It seemed cool, but to me, it didn't seem natural. It didn't flow for me. It looked like he was concentrating too much on actually doing the drill.
Well,
so if it was really a receiver out there, he might have got, you know what I mean?
He's one of those dudes where, again, he's, like you say, he's an athlete. Technique isn't necessarily his forte. He's going to have to acquire that in the league working with D-back coaches. He's one of those dudes who hasn't spent a lot of time at the position. He was just an athlete. He was too busy getting treed out.
He was on his after. Austin, let me ask you something. Who would you compare him to in the league? Who would you compare him to at corner now? I mean, not saying that he is at that level, but if you would compare his style, would it be
kick returner, punt returner type dude? So if you ask any technician, huh? What'd you say, Jimmy?
A bad technique.
Yeah, if you ask any technician about Patrick Peterson, they're going to say, well, his feet aren't that great and his hips aren't that great, but when you're that quick and that fast, you cover it up.
You do what you want.
Let me ask you a question. This is like Grill B. Austin moment.
This is his thing.
In terms of a technician, you know what I'm saying, who would you consider the best technician in the league? Not corner, but just in terms of technique.
Technician at what position?
Corner. We're talking about corner.
At corner? I like Donta Robinson. I like Jonathan Joseph. I like obviously Darrell Revis pre injury.
What about Champ Bailey?
Champ is
no. We're not mentioning Champ. We can't talk about Champ.
Champ is okay, but he's another dude that's a super freak athlete. So his technique is okay for an athlete, but. He relies on the fact that he's faster than you, he's quicker than you, to kind of make plays.
We should say that in the past tense though when we talk about.
Yeah, we definitely should.
I'm not ready to poop on Champ just.
No, I'm just saying faster than
you. No, I am.
I'm saying faster and quicker than you because I've seen. anyway, go ahead, Austin.
Jonathan Joseph, Donta Robinson, and Darrell Revis are my.
So where's Nnamdi's technique? Where would you rate Nnamdi's technique?
I'm gonna be objective or try to be. And Nnamdi isn't as bad as we as Eagles fans make him out to be. He's obviously not as good as the money he got. Nnamdi was strictly a cover zero, cover one. Jam you at the line, use his hands, his long arms to reroute you type of corner. And in Oakland, without any discipline, with them always losing, they were like, why pick on Nnamdi when we can throw on everybody?
The question is, and I know we're getting off topic, but it's like, if you realize that, mm-hmm. why do you continue to put him in a position?
Yeah.
As a coach, isn't your job to put your players in the
it's other personnel. So you got to think about
not only the corners, but
the safeties. You know, the safeties were more of a fit for a zone scheme, so they tried to balance
it. We have horrible safeties.
Yeah.
And I think about Nnamdi, too, is – oh, my fault, Dad.
All I'm saying is all I know, they was balling better before Castillo got fired. Go ahead, BJ.
Yeah.
I just want to say one thing about Nnamdi with his coverage, like what Brad was saying. He's a tall corner, and he has very long legs. And I noticed that a lot of times with his hip movement, he gets turned around a little bit because his legs are just
not
longer.
Get back
more,
on track.
Right, exactly. Whereas a Revis is a little bit more like stout.
Compact.
And like his hip.
Yeah,
yeah exactly.
Yeah.
So you notice that with Nnamdi, it's like he has long strides, even the way he just runs as a human. He has longer strides
no.
as a human.
Tripping over his own
trying to turn. I got a question.
That's a great point.
Since y'all are in Philly, well, P. Austin and Jimmy, is Nnamdi still driving his 96 Maxima that he drove in Oakland?
He used to drive
a 96 Maxima, even though he was a millionaire, just to kind of, like, prove a point.
Yeah,
he
better have a AAA card if he got 96 Maxima.
They said he eats in his car instead of eating with the team. At like practice and stuff,
he's a noodle. Percent was the same way back in the day. They used to use Bobby. Yo, put your hands on him and let him reroute and just run straight with him instead of trying to get locked into turning or route situations.
We'll get to the quarterback before he gets back on track.
It's gonna happen with Richard Sherman and Browner or whatever up there. They're gonna. I'm not gonna say they're gonna get exposed, but I imagine that's a challenge they face. They got to get to the corner and to the quarterback on that D line, and they got to play physical up at the line of scrimmage instead of trying to run with them stride for stride.
That's another thing that exposes Nnamdi, though, because the Eagles got absolutely no pass rush. So them dudes out there covering longer than they supposed to.
The year before, they sacked everything. But listen, though, this whole conversation started about the combine. And how overrated it is.
Mm-hmm.
B. Austin sent me something a while ago that I just wanted to read in terms of how overrated it is. Anquan Boldin was drafted after his teammate Bryant Johnson because Johnson ran a 4.37 in the 40, and Anquan Boldin ran a 4.71. So Bryant was taken in the first round, and Boldin was taken like 37 picks later.
Who?
And that's exactly what Bryant is out of the league.
Thanks.
Yo.
Bryant was right out the league, but Bolden in his rookie year caught 101 passes.
I was about to say,
yo,
his
I
first
really
three
don't,
years,
I really
Jimmy,
don't know
he
who
had,
that
he
is.
Set the record for his pace in like
yeah.
the first two or three years
but
in the league.
But that shows you. But the only reason that he fell so low was because of his 40 time. They said the same thing happened with Marcus Colston. Marcus Colston's 40 time was 4.71.
Yo, he went
and
like
made
seventh
him fall
round, didn't he?
Seventh round because of
he's a
you know
beast.
Because of his 40 time.
Too much stock into the draft, obviously. And then there
you
are people
combine.
That say it
you
doesn't
mean
the combine.
Combine.
Yeah, the combine, excuse me. Then there are those that say it doesn't mean anything at all. I think it falls somewhere in between. I think you do get valuable information out of the
like
combine.
What?
Health.
Like what?
Health.
Especially,
you know,
especially
they
when you ask dudes if their
I mean,
mom was a toot. Is your mom a
toot? I mean,
the
I mean,
mental aspects.
I'm just saying
health.
In terms of from a physical standpoint. Like,
physical.
Why does a center run a 40-yard dash? That's
no,
not
I got another option.
Health keep and broad jump is meant to test explosiveness. Now, there are things. I think that this is a great dialogue.
J.J. Watt
here,
probably
here,
dominated
here,
that jump.
Here it breaks down. There are certain drills that certain positions shouldn't have to do. You don't care what your lineman's 40 is. They shouldn't have to run it. It doesn't mean anything. Even for your linebackers who are never, unless you're Patrick Willis or you're James, your Urlacher or you're somebody in a two, like you don't need to run a 40 even as a linebacker. You want to know what their short shuttle is. You want
to
know
what
how
they can
quick
do side
they are.
To side.
Yeah, and side to side, quick as opposed to fast. For a safety, I want to know your range, so I want to know your speed. I don't necessarily care about, you know, the number of bench presses you can do or the number, you know, I want to know, can you get sideline to sideline and how deep can you get, how fast? So I think they need to tailor it more towards position. You know, they do tailor it a little bit, but I think it needs to be more position focused because a lot of this stuff is asinine. It doesn't factor into what they do in a game.
The fastest 40 time this year went to Texas wide receiver Marquise Goodwin. He ran a 4.27. He was the only sub 4.3 of the whole combine, and he was only 0.3 shy of the greatest time of all time, Chris Johnson, who ran a 4.24. But the problem with this dude is he's only 5'9", and last year he caught 26 passes for 340 yards.
Yeah.
So he's, to me, that would be a knock on a guy. Like, you're in the NFL. You're going to have to play in a lot of different places. So are you just going to be a hometown warrior? Like, when we go on the road, are you going to be useless because you're not comfortable? Like, I think that's a knock.
Yeah. Yo, that's why NFL teams win so many games at home. About most sports.
Yeah.
Right.
Trash on the road and can't play in front of that with that pressure.
Manti Te'o.
Yeah, but no, we...
Yo, I don't understand with Manti, right? I don't understand why he didn't bench press. Now, I ain't trying to be funny, but clearly they say, as we've heard in movies and from other people, women weaken legs. Now, this man clearly is not
fake
having
women.
Sexual intercourse with anything. So he should be cock strong as an ox right now. So I don't know why he ain't get down on that bench and throw that 225 up about 73 times, man. He should be so strong and bent up with testosterone. That he should have been down there and got put. He should have put up record numbers, man. But anyway,
you know what, though, PJ? He probably was getting it off, though, because he had a lot of phone conversations.
Yeah, he got a good imagination, so he probably.
If this thing truly was a hoax, like, how does he feel right now that he was getting it off to a dude the whole time?
Man,
yo, can you imagine the ish talking that he's going to take in game?
That's what every ex-NFL player that's a quote-unquote analyst these days is saying. Yo, when this dude gets into, like, he's like, they already give rookies a hard time. But
what they did was basically some slick accounting because he's guaranteed, like, $30 million in this new deal, which takes his total guarantees, you know, way up. But it looks like to everybody that he took a pay cut for the betterment of the team. And really, it's basically a restructure where his cap number is much lower, but they're giving him all this guaranteed money. He's making more money than he was going to make in the first place. So, I mean, is it cool that he's actually going around and he was trying to accept all that praise for taking less money for the team when he's really not taking less money for the team?
I'm gonna say in his case, Yes. I think that, you know, if you're watching the game and you understand the accounting and the business side, you know that he's actually structured a more advantageous deal for himself. But in his instance,
and for the team,
he was one of those guys that was going to probably see the end of that contract, even though it was non-guaranteed. So you got a lot of guys, like a Nate Clemens deal. You know Nate's never going to see the backload of that contract. But Tom Brady stands a very good chance, whether it's guaranteed or not, of them paying him out that full amount. So I do think that there's more merit with him being a franchise quarterback restructuring than, let's say, someone who's playing linebacker, someone who's playing corner, who, as their production declines, those big numbers in that contract don't mean anything because they're going to get cut before they see the end of it.
Old deal was going to pay him like $9.75 million in base salary for the next two seasons. So basically, his base salary is way down, but he's getting all this guaranteed
getting all
money,
his money up front.
That doesn't count against
cap. It's like
he's
getting bonus checks or something.
Yeah, so it's like you're not that much of a hero. You just helped us in our accounting. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's a no-brainer. I mean, if they come to you, I'm like, look, Tom, we're going to do this. It's not going to affect you. You're actually going to make more money, but it's going to help our cap out. So we're just going to write this new deal up. Like, what is he going to say, no? Like, he's not stupid.
NFL's got that hard cap. Ain't no luxury tax.
So actually on this, I give praise to the Patriots and their accounting staff for coming up with a way to free up $15 million so they can sign a Wes Welker and whoever else they want to sign. But I'm not going to sit here and praise Tom Brady for saying yes to more money.
Yes. You know what's crazy? In Arizona, Kurt Warner was willing to do the same thing when he was up for renewal, because you know how Anquan Boldin was always at odds with the front office because they wouldn't give him his money, even though he'd get like 110 seasons. So Kurt Warner was willing to take less money, restructure his deal, and so they could keep Boldin, and it was just like, nah, don't worry about it.
They
ain't have the good accountants. They like, we can't figure this out. Nah, man.
They can't get some numbers right.
Yeah, we can't get these numbers right.
Man, all I got to say is Brady be frauding, man. That's all I'm going to leave.
And Brady's wife is worth like $200 million. So, I mean, he could probably play for free and still be cool.
Yeah.
Giselle's getting money.
She got that chicken. She got that chicken.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But I'm going to leave it at that. All I got to say is Brady be fraud. He, you know. That's all I'm going to say, yo. I mean, real talk, he be fraud. He knows better than that, man.
Brady, speaking of deals, Steven Jackson is actually expected to opt out of his last year of his contract. I know he's, of course, the St. Louis Rams all-time leading rusher.
That ain't hard to be in, but still.
He has 8 years straight of 1,000 yards rushing, which I know he gets injured a lot. And he's about to be 30 years old. So he's scheduled to make $7 million this year for the upcoming season. And it was unclear whether the Rams were really going to keep him for that money anyway. So they actually allowed him, you know, during the year to get a clause in his contract where he could void his deal. He has 2,395 carries for 10,135 yards, 56 touchdowns, but he's never played for a winning team. So do y'all think at 30 years old, with all the injuries, all the mileage, all the carries, do y'all think he can land somewhere on a contender and you know, actually be the guy again?
Absolutely.
Or is he going to be a committee?
I think he might have to be. You think he could be the man again?
I'm absolutely positive of it. Not because it's going to be a long-term situation. What you do with somebody like him, if he shows that he can produce anywhere near his peak level, then you give him short-term deals that are incentive-laden. You don't sign him for more than 2 years, and you tie all of the money to hurdles, and that's how you pay him. And you let him understand it up front. Now, the injury bug is the thing with him. He takes so much of a pounding running between the tackles. You got to wonder, is he still fit? But I'd be willing to take a two-year flyer on him. I'll take a two-year flyer on him.
My thing is this. I think that he can, because at the end of the day, everybody is running back by
committee.
Yeah, so with that being said, I mean, he can fit right in with my Broncos. I mean, you know, FOH to the game. Let's bring in Steven Jackson.
I'm hearing that Atlanta might be a destination for him because they're probably not going to have Turner back.
Okay.
So
they're
Atlanta
exchanging
might be
one. They're exchanging one high heavy use back for another.
Yeah. I mean, but they got, you know, a couple other dudes back there that they can spell them with.
Yeah, they definitely do.
They got three backs
in their rotation. They use three running backs. So
if they can grab Steven Jackson and they get, what's the dude, the tight end back, Gonzalez, you know, they can make another run and choke and sell out again. So,
you know. Yeah, possibly. But I think that, you know, in the NFL, he definitely has a couple of years left just because – every team is running back by
at least he'll be on a winning team. They'll be over 500.
If I was him, I'd go to Green Bay. Because who the hell is their running back? James Starks?
Yeah. But I'm thinking,
Iron Man.
Does Green Bay
run
the ball?
Their running back is Aaron Rodgers.
Do they keep average backs because they don't want to run the ball? They don't want to have an excuse to have to run the ball.
No,
I think
in this day and age,
he might play seven more years.
I'm sure they could have found a better back by now.
In this day and age, with the way their offense is structured, why pay all of that money for an elite back when you can get, you know, mediocre production that fits into what it is that you do, which is feature Aaron Rodgers.
So you think he's
going
to get a big deal?
Well, he's 30, so he can.
I don't think he's
going to
get a I don't think it's going to be a big deal at all, Jimmy. I think they're going to sign him to a base salary with incentives, kind of like what they did with Edgerrin James, you know, in some of his contracts. Small base incentives. If you can hit 1,000 yards, we'll pay you extra $1 million. If you can hit 1,300 yards, we'll give you extra $500,000. If you can get this many touchdowns, you know.
All right. Well, look, the biggest move of the week, because we got to hurry up and get some NBA talk. Biggest move of the week, of course, was the Chiefs trading for Alex Smith. All of the terms of the deal aren't out because it can't be official to the March 12th anyway, but we do know they're getting a second rounder this year and they're getting some more picks next year for Alex Smith. That second rounder is the 34th overall pick in the draft, and that gives San Francisco 15 picks to play with. I'm pretty sure they won't go into April 25th with 15, but they're going to work those picks to make their team better. So this is a team who was in the Super Bowl and they get to retool with 15 picks to do what they wish, make picks, make trades. Yo, the San Francisco 49ers are going to be something to reckon with again next year. But do y'all think Alex Smith on the other side is going to thrive under Big Red? You know how he does with quarterbacks.
Well, you know, Big Red is good for dressing them up, dressing the quarterbacks up, making them look all pretty. Until you get them home and take that makeup off. And then they like, whoa! You know what I'm saying? So,
got Daniel Snyder good. Got him good.
They got Snyder good. They got the Dolphins good with A.J. Philly.
With
A.J. Philly. Cardinals good with Kevin Cobb.
Yo,
Andy Reid is that dude. Yo, that's what I think. I don't necessarily think it's going to lead to a bunch of extra wins, but Alex Smith will have the most 300-yard games of his career next year. You know, his stats are going to be a little inflated. You know, he's going to have a running back to throw screens to that's very fast and can do the Westbrook thing after receiving a catch on the line of scrimmage. So, I think his stats will inflate a little bit, and people will start to think Alex Smith is way better than what he really is.
So do you think Niners fans, like Andy Reid is going to make Alex Smith look so good that Niner fans are going to regret getting rid of Smith if Colin Kaepernick?
Nah.
It depends on what Kaepernick does, though. If Kaepernick is growing.
It's a funny thing, man. In terms of the
Kaepernick,
Niners, yo, Niners going to flip some of them picks and they're going to end up with Honey Badger what?
They're going to end up with Darrell Revis, probably.
Probably. How about that? They may end up with Revis. They put that work in, yo. They've been grinding, man. Shout out to the Niners
for
that, man.
Hey, the speaker, I think Jimmy, you made this point.
I go by the name. Hey,
I think you made this point in the video yesterday about is Castle. One of you guys made the point on the video last night.
Yeah, that was me. That was my genius.
Castle's better than Al Smith. And the crazy thing is, the fans were clapping and cheering because Castle caught a concussion last year.
And that's what I was saying. Yeah. That's what I was saying to Jimmy. Like, it might be a case where Alex Smith isn't really that much better than Castle, but the fans in Kansas City are already so tired of dude that they went that far to clap when the dude was laying on the ground half
but
dead.
But Andy, though, for me,
so,
I'm like, yo, Andy Reid.
But Andy,
don't care what this
I know, but Castle's not his guy. It's not like he brought him in. Like Andy Reid didn't
that's
care
a great point.
What
that's
we thought about
point.
Donovan McNabb because that was his dude.
That
you don't know
guy.
Castle
that's
like that.
Point.
Smack Castle. PJ, what are you about to say? PJ, what?
Yo, no, I wasn't saying nothing. I'm
okay.
Just listening to the commentary.
Well, we do have a call. We do have a call on the line, by the way. The brother Casey Mack called in to make a point. Let's bring him on real fast.
I'll say.
KC!
What's going on, War Room?
What's going
Kansas
on?
Kansas City
what
Mack.
Do?
What you think about
should
this?
Should my blood pressure be up? Should my blood pressure be up? I mean, how many times we going go to San Francisco and borrow when they had a big quarterback, Montana, Burbank,
yeah.
Bono,
DeBerg.
Alex Smith, DeBerg. Where are we going to get our own rookie quarterback to save our franchise? I mean, Kansas City is the only franchise, I mean, just the only time we get the first pick of the draft and no quarterback worth the damn getting.
I'm thinking that Alex Smith can provide you with some game management and you retool at your skill positions.
Okay.
Well, I got a different thought, Casey.
Who does game management now? RG3 is doing game management. Andrew Luck not game management. I need the ball.
With RG3 and Andrew Luck is coming out in this draft, by the way. Let me know.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Barkley and Geno Smith.
Take a flower, Geno. I don't care. Give him.
No, not with number one.
I don't need a Band-Aid.
You need to build the trenches up, your offensive and defensive line. You need to build those up.
That's a good thing about
it, though.
That's
what wins games. Forget all
they're
going to
be able to get that lineman that they wanted.
Yeah, it's all about the fat. It's all about the fat guys, Casey Mack, man.
Fat guys are
fat
ball
guys
games,
rule.
Bro.
Yeah, fat guys rule, man. And the reason that RG3 made the noise that he made was because he had a 1,500-yard back behind him, and they had nothing else on offense. Like, he had to make plays. If you retool with the right fat guys and the right skill position players, then you don't have to put that much pressure on your QB.
Hey, Bing. We Kansas City Chiefs 12-14 last year, got 1,500-yard back last year.
Yeah.
We need somebody that can move the ball in the air. Kansas City has a history of quarterbacks who manage the game. They have never had anybody that can throw the ball downfield.
Anybody in the draft, they can't even.
I'm telling you, man,
Andy
gonna make you think Alex Smith is better than he is. You gonna dress that pig up for you?
Yeah, we promise
you
that.
Do you think Andy's gonna get a quarterback anywhere in the draft?
No.
You said anywhere in the draft,
maybe fourth round, maybe fifth round.
No, yeah,
round,
they're gonna draft a quarterback. It just won't be in the first round. Maybe the earliest it would be second, but I'm thinking third round, fourth round.
There's
no
quarterback worthy of a pick specifically.
But that's why I said. Yeah, it's no
fourth.
High quarterback out there, so he might grab somebody third round, fourth round just to.
Yeah. He always has a young quarterback that he's trying to, build up.
He's trying to bamboozle you.
Yeah, exactly.
He might get the educated brother from
Ohio
State.
What's
the
boy's
got a bamboozle in the pipeline.
It works because his starter will go out. He'll have this new quarterback come in and throw 300-yard games right off the bat, and then somebody will be giving him a second-round pick for it next year. So don't worry about it, man. Andy gonna hook y'all up. You're going to be upset with his in-game coaching, his adjustments, or lack thereof.
And Jamal Charles might only receive passes. He might not get no handoffs for the rest of his career that Andy did.
His handoffs are going to be screens.
Yeah, he's going to get screens, though.
Jamal Charles will not get over 240 carries next year.
No,
1,500 yard back that don't get over 240 carries.
Yo, he will not. Yo, Andy doesn't care.
Yo, he's
care.
Playing with Andy. He don't believe in that.
He don't.
Andy bringing a new religion.
Y'all about to learn.
Is Dwayne Bowe happy today? Is Dwayne Bowe happy?
Yeah.
On this decision?
Oh, man. Dwayne Bowe is ecstatic that Andy Reid is coming to town.
He probably shouldn't be, though. The tight ends and running back should be happy.
Yeah.
Dwayne Bowe is a tight end.
Andy Reid knows that he has to put y'all in a position to make plays. So,
I'm going to tell you what, also, I hope once the game is over, don't be looking for any type of deep analysis of the game or explanation as to what happened, because Andy ain't giving up no tape. Andy would be the best person to do a crime with. If he was going to rob a bank, Andy would be your best person to do it with.
Andy not going to tell you.
He ain't saying my name. Andy ain't mentioning your name.
He ain't putting nobody out there.
And not only that, Andy's going to blame himself if the robbery goes wrong.
Exactly.
It's my fault.
Say,
I
got to
do a better job in cleaning
exactly.
the weapon. I got to do a better job in carrying the bag.
I got
to
dump the
out.
Prints next time. Yep.
You sound like KC Mack flying an airplane right now.
I know.
Yo, we don't.
Yo.
We're about to talk some NBA. So we're
all right, Casey, man. We have
all right, Casey.
Go. Oh, okay. All
right, Casey. Hi, Dana.
All right. Jim. Let's talk some NBA real quick, man, because we got some stuff to cover and we don't have
the light skin brothers are back.
Yo, NBA rap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. Let's make a long story long by saying go to Stitcher.com/thewarroom. And download this application now. If not, I'm going to smack you. And you can get it from your iPhone, your Android phone, your BlackBerry, your Palm phone, your computer, anywhere you want to. Stitcher.com/thewarroom. Use the coupon code thewarroom because you can win a couple dollars if you do that. Let's jump right into it.
I think he's saying get down or lay down.
He will
smack you.
Let's
start the NBA
though.
Talk off by going over the players of the week.
It's back to normal because your Lakers are winning now. So it's Kobe Bryant and LeBron James. Kobe led the Lakers to a 3-0 week. He beat the Celtics, the Blazers in that run. And he scored 31.3 a game, 7.7 rebounds, and 6 assists. He had a 30.12 rebound, 7 assists performance against Dallas. Told them to amnesty that on Twitter. LeBron led the Heat to a 4-0 week. They had road wins over Atlanta, Chicago, and our lowly Sixers. He averaged, you know, this is low for him, 23.5 points, 9.3 assists, 2.25 steals, and 7.8 rebounds. He had two double-doubles and a 16.11 assists, 10-rebound triple-double against our lowly Sixers. And they killing.
I just
want to
say one thing.
They got a 6-game advantage over the 2-seed Indiana. And
yeah,
the Lakers are only 2.5 games out of that 8th spot.
That Sixers game was one of his most dominant performances because I swear to you, LeBron didn't even break a sweat that game, y'all.
Yeah, he didn't. He didn't do anything.
It's the Sixers. He ain't really got to.
Yeah, it's hard to be up to him still.
Mike Cassidy could do that to the Sixers.
Yo! The question we've been posing all week is, in 2014, could LeBron opt out and end up back in Cleveland? We actually did a video on War Room Sports TV about it, you know what I mean? So you can check it out there. But, you know, there's nothing really to say there. We can, you know, have him watch the video. But let me ask you guys another question about LeBron. LeBron says he may stop dunking in warm-ups due to his fan criticism because I don't know if you guys have been watching, but LeBron has been doing these drawing dunks in warm-ups, which are like, you know, the dunk contest dunks, and people are getting excited about it. So do you guys think that he's being too sensitive?
It's not just him. It's like a team thing. They line up and they kind of have a dunk contest. Even your man Rio been doing some nasty dunks. I didn't even know he could dunk. But let me read you his quote before y'all answer. He was like, maybe I should stop because it's making a lot of people mad about what I do. He said, they're like, well, if you can do it in warm-ups, why can't you be in a dunk contest? Stop it. I personally think he's being a little too sensitive again and caring too much what people are saying. He claims, in this same interview, he claims he doesn't watch much TV or read stories on the internet or the newspapers, but that's not true because you know exactly what the people are saying and it's actually affecting your opinions and your
thought
process.
Well, that's because LeBron lives on Twitter too, though. He probably hears people
but he's trying to act like he don't read. If you're on Twitter, you are reading the news.
Yeah, more or less these days. These days, that is where the news is. You're right. Yeah. But here's my thing. I don't know if it was him being sensitive or him loving attention. To me, the whole fact that you have to come out and say that is like, yo, I'm going to stop dunking because people are getting mad. It's like, yo, watch what I'm doing. It's like, dude, man, these players just irritate me. What's
well,
the point of even...
This speaks to my point from yesterday. I mean, last week, man. I'm just like this. It's all good that you want to do the dunks. I have no issue with you, especially before the game. I mean, really, y'all just entertaining the fans and having a little competitive, you know, dunk contest going on. But my thing is, I don't understand why you don't get in the dunk contest. It's clear that you enjoy doing that. Y'all do it before the games. I mean, I'm not mad at you for not getting in the dunk contest, but if you're doing those ridiculous dunks, why don't you just get in a dunk contest? Because that's really, in my opinion, that's just giving something back to the fans. Like, that's what everybody, every basketball fan in the world is watching All-Star Weekend. So I don't understand why you don't get in a dunk contest and do those same dunks you do before every game. I mean, I don't know. I don't see what the big deal is. I mean, you do it all the time. And he's a freak. I mean, it's not like he's just, like, he's 6'8", and we all know his you know, breakdown of his body and his skill set and all that, so... I'm like, look, dog, you are being sensitive by saying maybe I should stop. I think he's being a little bit sensitive saying maybe I should stop, though. I mean, it's just, but that, you know what, and I'm not going to run on with this, but I think he, again, I always say that there's something about LeBron that reminds me of McNabb, and it's something to do with their, like, emotional breakdown, chemical, you know, passive-aggressive, sensitive side. They have something in common, man.
Don't need a man that'll give you money. He's kind of Trezvanny. That's his problem. But at the end of the day, man, I think this is a non-story, man. I don't even know why it was made a big deal. But he, listen, man, LeBron should have said, look, I'm going to do what I want to do, FOH. So the Lakers are playing better, and Kobe guarantees that they will make the playoffs. Some people got pissed at him saying that, which I don't understand. But my question to you, gentlemen, is, as it stands, Deb just mentioned, two games out. What do you think?
2.5.
2.5, excuse me. What do you guys think? What do you think the chances are?
I never really thought that they weren't going to make the playoffs. I mean, it did get kind of crazy there because, you know, they were just – they just kept losing games when you thought they might come to a point where they turned the corner. But they've won 11 of their last 16, and, of course, they're now 28-30. They haven't even reached 500 yet, and they're still pretty much in the mix for the seventh or the eighth spot, you know, possibly the sixth, but you would need, you know, a few teams to actually drop down on that. I think that they'll make it. And he spoke a little cocky about not being afraid of anybody that they ended up playing. Of course, they wouldn't be a favorite coming in the seventh or eighth spot, but I do think that it'll be a situation where those top two teams, you know, they might feel some type of way about, you know, we played well all season and then we're rewarded with playing with this team who was favored to be champions when the season started. So it could be a situation where you don't want to play them because they might, by the time the playoffs come, they might finally be hitting that stride that people thought that they could hit. And that won't bode well for the top teams in the league. But
and this is true. I mean, it all depends upon, like, if Dwight could have – and I know the guy's, like, hurt or what have you, but his explosiveness when you watch him play is gone. It's sad to say, like, I've been trying to, like, not say this the whole season, like, thinking, okay, it'll come back. His explosiveness is gone, and that's what made him, in my opinion, a top-five player. When he was completely healthy and he had his explosiveness, he's a top-five player in the league. But it's completely gone. And I don't know whether, you know, within the effort that he gives. I remember I sent you guys a video the other day of him, like, you know, not hustling for the ball, like, his effort and energy is not there as well. But if somehow they find a way to get into the playoffs, it definitely is a tough out because, you know, you got the Black Mamba, you got, you know, Dwight if he can get together. And, you know,
he might be resting. This might be
he might be doing his shit.
Or D'Antoni might be Popovich-ing, but while he's playing him, like, yo, don't play hard.
Yeah. Yeah, you know,
so you make this playoff
time,
run, then I want you to turn back into the Incredible Hulk, and then
in the
playoffs,
you know, when the playoffs start, your man always turn it up, man.
Yo, what happened to Pete?
Meta World Peace always turns it up. So that'd definitely be a tough out for anybody if they can happen to creep into the playoffs. Now, I know that you always told me they're going to make it, but I was down on them even making it. And part of the reason is not only that they're winning, some teams have, like, fallen off. Like, Golden State lost, like, 9 out of 11 games, something like that, something crazy. So it's not just they're winning. There are teams ahead of them that are just, like, losing.
They could have won last night had they had David Lee, but that so-called brawl messed that all up.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I wanted to have to go to overtime so my young boy could get 60, because my young boy.
Yo, before we even get into that, let me ask you guys another question real quick before we get to that, man, because I want to start the hashtag Blame Bynum campaign. They said that Andrew Bynum is not impressing in practice thus far, and add insult to injury. Doug Collins, he went off on his team after their 6th straight loss, and they lost to the Orlando Magic, who nobody should lose to. Doug Collins blamed everybody but himself, basically.
The Bynum thing, Jim, Collins said he looked like a guy who hadn't played in 9 months. I don't think any bells and whistles should be sent off that he's close to playing. And then Bynum said, I'll definitely be back sometime this year. I'm focused on getting back and being right versus trying to rush. So
he meant October. He said this year, this season. Jake.
I hope Andrew Bynum gets hit by a car tonight. I blame all of my frustration on this team on that big Harriet Tubman, Frederick Douglass headed big stiff. Because you know what, man? Look, my thing is this, dog. Last year he had the same knee problem, right? And he only missed 2 games. Why the heck? What the heck happened between last year and this year? So I guess this year he's like, I just want to get right, right?
What I want to know, PJ, is who in the Sixers medical staff missed
this
when they were doing the trade evaluation? How does he pass
his physical?
How does he pass his physical, man?
He's trying to stick it to the Sixers. Like,
here's the situation, though, right? Last year he had Kobe. He had Kobe. He had to basically answer to. The Sixers don't have that veteran leadership or anybody. They were expected him to be the leader.
They told him
that
he was the man. So he like,
you're the man.
Bro, I'm the man. Oh, man, I'm going to go chill then.
He's getting hurt bowling. Come on, man.
Me and Dev had a conversation last night, PJ. I want to see if you agree with this. Me and Dev were talking about it. We were saying that one thing that makes bad about Bynum is when you look at him, he always is smirking like he doesn't care, like something's funny. It's like his mannerisms are like, he has a Jay Cutler mannerisms. Like, yo,
his mannerisms, Jim, are saying to people that direct deposit just cleared. So I'm good.
I just got that nice $400
like straight cash, shall we? Yeah, man, he does. He got that face. He one of them, like, smirk in the face as ninjas. You know what I'm saying? He one of them. Nah, he got his normal poker face is a smirk. So that, like you said, that makes things even worse, and it didn't help with his hairstyle.
Cash,
exactly.
Because his hair, it seemed like he was just trying to play around.
Yeah, he just playing. You know, I don't know that he is, but it just seems like that, man. And you, there's not the town for that kind of stuff, yo.
About them saying that he has degenerative knees, because LaRoy just chimed in and said that he was told the same thing. His doctor basically said, listen, you can't run. So he actually said that Bynum has this injury. So is he going to be okay long term at all?
I don't think if you got a degenerative condition, how are you going to reverse that?
Listen, man,
they might have to give up on the Bynum train.
Yo, based on what we're talking right now and with the way PJ is feeling, Jimmy, if you don't mind me doing the honors, yo, your man is
midgets beat him in the knees tomorrow night. I hope tomorrow night, I hope he run into like 12 mean saber-tooth midgets
the
that beat the trash out of his knees and stomp on him.
Saber-tooth midgets, though?
Yeah, man. I hate Andrew Bynum. Ugly.
Well, as far as Doug Collins going off on the team, Jimmy and I were on Hoop Girls Radio last night. We're trying to explain to them, because they asked who we gave the blame to, and it still has to go back to Bynum. Not like a malicious type blame, but the fact that they got Bynum, you have to look at the roster and how they tried to build the team around him. You got rid of Iguodala, you got rid of Vucevic, you got rid of
some pretty good players because you wanted to surround him with shooters because you're banking on a healthy Bynum. So you pick up Darrell Wright, a shooter. Jason Richardson, a shooter. Nick Young.
Swaggy P.
But without the centerpiece that they thought that these guys were going to be around, this roster stinks. Like, they're not good without that dominant big man down there.
And,
so now, because
this?
He's hurt, we're paying the price for it at this time.
Yeah.
So, in our chat room, Shizzy the King, he said that Bynum seems as though he's one of those guys who never wanted to play, but he just played because he was tall as a young boy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's dead on. Well, I mean, we can't prove it because he hasn't admitted it, but I've already resigned to that as a fact.
He hasn't admitted it.
Yeah,
so
I resigned to what he just said.
I'm 7 foot, so I might as well play.
Yeah, I resigned to that. That is the fact. Dude is uber talented. He's 7'2". He doesn't really care about basketball or being great, but damn it, if I got a hustle that's going to pay me 9 figures, what else I'm going to do? I'm going to fake an injury. I'm not going to rush to get back. I'm gonna go to Atlantic City. I'm going to look doofy and crazy with my hair. I'm going to, play the slots. I'm going to bowl, get my lucky strike on. I can trick off on a nice little Myra when I need to. That's Bynum, man. And I tune into the Sixers to watch Drew Holiday. That's it. That's what I watch Drew Holiday.
But, hey, Brad, we lost to a Division III junior college handicap team last night. You know what I'm saying?
Who was it? The night before that.
Orlando, I'm talking about.
Orlando?
We lost the big baby.
Then Doug Collins won't play young players. He won't play Moultrie.
Until we get blown out, then he put him in. And he
gets
punished the starters.
We lost the big baby
in them.
And Doug Collins, I understand your frustration, but you can't separate yourself from the team like that when you're going on that rant. My man said, when I was playing, I never got booed. I ran through my sneakers. I don't know what that means, but I guess that means they
hard.
How you run through that sneakers? There was a bunch of sneakers on the field, on the court. You just ran through them. A big pile of sneakers.
All that means he played in Chucks. Exactly.
Exactly. You had dental floss that stitched your sneakers up. That's why you ran through them, But come on,
but
Doug.
That's his twist, though.
Yeah.
If you notice, he's never been the coach of a team for more than 3 years. Third year, he always has these kind of meltdowns.
Yeah.
Can't get the team over the hump. Can't get
my
any better.
And
he's gone.
His patience only goes for so far.
No, you know what it is. I got a logic behind that though, Dev. I don't think he has a lot of connection with the front office, so it may not have been his desire to have the team constituted as it is. He's just
no,
he fought for power,
and they gave it to him. He has final call now. He didn't before.
He has final call.
But he fought for final call.
He's like Elijah Muhammad.
He
got final call, yo.
Yeah, he did this. Now I'm not even going to knock him for it though, because at the beginning of the season we thought it was good. Like, we're not used to seeing the Sixers make aggressive moves like this. So I'm not knocking him for it, but he did do this.
Okay.
Right. We got shooters and all that, thinking we're gonna have a post presence. I mean, we got Nick Young. He would rather eat. He would rather shoot than eat. Nick Young just want to shoot.
But you know what? I think if you're gonna completely turn the roster over like that, then your backup big man has to be pretty good too.
That's
the thing. You got to have somebody else. Like, okay, if he go down, we're gonna go through him a little bit.
And despite what you see on your TV, despite what you see on your TV with Spencer Halls, he is only 6'3". He's only 6'3". I know it looks like he's 7 feet.
I think it was Roy on Twitter, Roy from the Boys United. He told me Spencer Hall is the most talented bum in the NBA.
We
got a couple minutes left, man. The Sixers is just sad to talk about. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about last night.
Teach them how to Dougie.
Steph Curry trying to bring light-skinned brothers back, man.
Yo, shout out to El DeBarge, Christopher Williams, and Dirty.
I'll be sure with the hair all wavy.
Yo,
he went off last night, yo, and he was very efficient, very dominant. They lost, but what did you guys think about Steph Curry and moving forward?
First of all, Jim, I think they lost because Jared Jack got jealous and tried to stop passing
Jared
the ball
Jack,
to Steph Curry at the end of the game.
Yo, Dev hit it right on the nose.
He wanted to shoot himself.
Steph Curry put his lifetime in between the papers lines in that game, and the last. Second, the last minute, somebody else got to make a play. Somebody else got to make a shot. Now, I've seen Jared Jack ball under pressure. He's not a bum. Dude was jealous. Yo, he took the rock and turned it over twice. I was like, at this point, Jared Jack, you can't be on get back because dude already got 54 points.
You ain't gonna do nothing. Yeah.
But he's thinking, okay, he got 54, I got like 4. So I'm not going to catch him, but if I can hit the game winner, then they might celebrate me almost as much as
dude. Mm-hmm. In Jared Jack's mind, he's not just a bencher, a journeyman. Like Jared Jack believes.
He's not just Jared Jack.
He thinks
Jared Jack was in college for 13 years at like Georgia Tech. I swear he played with Kenny. He backed Kenny Anderson up. I don't know if y'all know that. He was Kenny Anderson back up. He played with Brian Oliver and Dennis Scott against Pete Smith and Michigan State.
Yo, we can poop on Jared Jack another. Let's talk about my young boy.
All right, go ahead.
Yo,
go ahead.
My young boy Steph was giving Raymond. Yo, he took Raymond Felton's soul. He took his soul. Yeah, I claimed it. He took Raymond's soul.
Yeah, some of the shots he was making, though, dog. I'm like,
on the right wing, in and out with the left hand behind the back, pull up, rainbow, fall down.
His little brother's sizzling lately too.
How good can he be? Like, where do you see him fitting in terms of the entire
NBA? He can be a great. I'm not saying he's on the track yet because injury wise he has been bit by the injury bug, and last season there were even whispers about him not being able to continue his career because of his ankles. But if you notice when you gauge a point guard, you gauge him. It shouldn't be not just passing, but mistake free basketball. Yo, dude's decision making is impeccable. He does not.
I don't know about that.
You think he's gonna be better than his dad? You think he's gonna be better than his dad?
Oh, he's already better than his dad.
I know.
He's actually surprised me because when he came out, my thing was, can he be a point guard? Because he was, he's a scorer, but he was a little dude. So he's not even a tweener. He's just a little dude. So.
Yeah.
He is surprising me at
defensively.
Right,
he's a lot. Defensively, he's a liability, but that doesn't matter in the NBA. So,
that's right.
They just like whatever.
Yo, PJ Street said he's better than his pop. Yo, his brother's better than his pop. Yo,
he was better than his dad in
the
ninth grade.
Dang, but still.
Dell used to light it up off the base. Remember when Dell played for the Hornets? He used to light it up
Dell was a gangster. Dell was the only gangster shooter. Like, he would shoot threes, but he always used to try and get in people's face.
Yeah.
And rumble.
Dell was my mega. Yo, Dell didn't jump. Dell shot. He didn't have a jump shot. He had a shot.
He had a line drive, pretty jump.
He had a Marley.
His release was quick
because
he knew he wasn't going to get away from you, so he had to.
He would pull up right in your lips too. He wouldn't get even no space. He'd pull up right on your mustache.
No lip jump shot, But at least he's been a good dad to his kids because both his kids got J work. Meanwhile, Tim Hardaway's son can't dribble.
In the face.
So you can tell who spend time with their kids, man, based upon their ball game.
Uh-huh.
Yo, man, I didn't want them to lose their game, man, and I was secretly rooting for overtime because I wanted the Bull to get 60.
Yeah. Well, the garden. The garden is good for that.
It's time for us to get out of here, man. Thanks for joining us in the war room today, folks. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, those on Facebook and Twitter, and the callers who called up to rap to us. Tune in same time, same place next week to Bust It Up with the Generals. We'll be talking with Spike Eskin from CBS Sports Philly about the state of Philly sports. We'll also speak with Khalid Salam, who's from the Shadow League, about street cred in the NBA. He's also a writer for Slam Magazine. Until then, enjoy your sports week. Be sure to catch our conversation on Facebook, Twitter, and make sure to tune in to WarRoomSportsTV.com. We update that throughout the week for all kinds of sports stories. So until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. I'll see you chumps on top.
Jimmy.
know the blueprint.
Yo.
Every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, Me Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. It's knocked out.
Call it
323 Brooklyn 0012. They be going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, the tough push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secrets, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-Flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cap? You better name us. War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.